Welcome to the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin, your source for real estate investment jewels of wisdom.
Welcome to the REI Diamond Show with Ted Thomas on tax lien investing. Dan Breslin here, your REI Diamond Show host. Today's episode on tax lien investing with Ted is important only if you want to learn how to buy properties for 20 to 30 cents on the dollar. Ted has an interesting story, previously building up a $200 million office and apartment complex portfolio before getting into the lower risk business of tax lien investing, and he's going to share his reasons behind that. He's also going to share with us the tax investing process, opportunity, pros and cons, along with a few risks to be aware of when investing in tax liens where you can also lose money in addition to making money. So we might as well get right into it, shall we? All right. Welcome to the show, Mr. Ted Thomas. How are you doing today?
Well, I'm great today, and I'm happy to be here in sunny Florida, although it's a little warm.
As it always is in, you know, the beginning, the middle of August, right?
Yes, exactly.
Fair enough. So for the REI Diamond Show listeners who probably or may not know who you are already, I know some of our Florida audience probably does and some other people around the country. Can you give us like a little bit of a background, you know, what you did, Ted, leading up to how you got to the business you're in today, and then a brief, like, you know, Reader's Digest version of what the business looks like today?
Great, great. Well, I started out, my first career was as an airline pilot, and I loved that. And as a matter of fact, I was lucky enough to work for Aloha Airlines in Honolulu, Hawaii, and I loved that. But when I found out how much money you could make in business, I decided I'd leave. I resigned from the airlines, and I came back to the what they call the mainland in those days, and I actually started a real estate business because I saw how much money could be made in real estate. So I started that business, but I didn't get involved in homes. I just got involved in apartments and office buildings. And fortunately for me, a lot of people wanted to invest, and that business grew, and it did very, very well. Matter of fact, it probably did too well because it went up like, not exactly like a rocket ship, but really close to that. So within 7 or 8 years, we were up to $200 million worth of property. And I felt pretty good about that, and we owned in 3 states. And then along came the first big recession in my life, and that took place in 1985 through 1989. And in 86, the markets just collapsed, and oh my goodness, it went all the way down to the property values dropped 60-70%. And of course, we still owed, you know, 80%. So, oh, we lost everything. So that big fancy private jet, that was gone, the fancy house in the country club. And at that point, I started saying to myself, you know, you better learn how to be a conservative investor. So that led me to what I'm in today. And it was really a surprise at first, but it was life-changing in the point that I could, you know, now do well and stay in a conservative business. So I started learning about tax lien certificates and tax defaulted property. And I said, my goodness, here I have always been buying retail, and I could buy in the wholesale market and buy it directly from the government. So that led me to, first I had to recover from that awful bankruptcy I went through in 86. I lost everything. So I had a few debts to pay, and I paid the debts, and then I started over again, and I'm still in the same business, and it's a capsulized view of it today. It's the kind of business you could run from a small office, you know, a 1,000-square-foot office with a couple of employees, or you could do it all by yourself if you wanted. And I learned about it, and then after I learned, I was kind of a maverick in the first part of the 90s. Nobody did tax liens or deeds, and I made the first infomercial, then I did some of the first books that were in the bookstore. And I started growing it, and then I said, wait a minute, I don't think I need a big company again. Why don't I keep a small company? And so I have a boutique firm now. We not only buy and sell tax-defaulted properties, but we teach it in all different ways. We teach it how to do it with books and DVDs. We have I know we have the only real online courses. And when the markets change, we just change with it. And so I teach it in Australia. I also teach in Bangkok, Singapore, all the provinces of Canada. And those people, of course, buy – now, this is going to sound kind of funny, but those people actually buy tax lien certificates and tax defaulted property here in the States. And we've taught them how to do it online. And so even people here don't do it online, but we've taught them how to do it online. So that's been a whole new business this past 2 or 3 years. And so that's kind of a capsulized form. We have three or four people that work for us, although I have under contract students of mine that are now coaches. You know, they've done 25, 70, 100 deals. And so we ask them, gee, you really know a lot. Can you be a coach? So we employ those people as coaches. And we can keep it small, and we can generate, you know, six-figure incomes are not unusual. Now, the average guy is not going to do that right away, but it's just a nice boutique business that anybody can do. So that's kind of capsulized form.
So something interesting about the whole story and the leading up to that, Ted, you know, 1985 to 89, I was 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years old. And I watched my dad, you know, lose his handful of single family rentals at that time. And it left
like a stain. Oh, my God.
You know, it was nowhere near the $200 million, but
I seriously mean I could feel his pain.
Yeah. And that was a big, you know, that was the story in that era. You know, it was the junk bond era, and it was the strip mall shopping center era. And the money was loose and easy and drove up asset values. And I'd say something similar happened in a different, and your asset classes, what was it, office property and apartment complexes?
Yes, yeah.
Were also a significant portion of where that the hit was taken during that time. Whereas I think when we had 2007, 8, 9, and 10 roll around, it was primarily in the single family residential market. So, you know, mainstream America was definitely much more affected and hit this time around, also with some of the other asset classes. Obviously, everything takes a hit. However, where I'm going with this long-winded tangent here, Ted, is what was your experience? You get into tax lien certificates, et cetera, this new business model in the 90s. You go through 2000, 2001, 2003, the market's, you know, shooting up like a rocket ship again, and then it hits the wall. So what happened in your business during that period of time? Would you mind doing a little bit of a play-by-play? Because a lot of people like myself got hurt during this last go-around.
It's so painful, but you'll never be hurt again because I take things from a positive side first. You won't be hurt again because you understand the cycle now in which we're starting into again. But so for the listener that didn't understand, that crash in 86, they closed 2,000 banks in the United States. Think about all those banks on the corner. They're all gone. Now there's just the B of A and the Wells Fargo and a few. They closed those banks because they all had real estate loans on them. So they wiped out. But the exact same thing took place in the retail market, which retail would be housing, as you said, in that 85 market, the same thing. Everybody wiped out. Here was the beauty of what I had done. And I like to think I'm smart, but, you know, I'm just really lucky. I didn't go back into real estate when I saw it inflating again. I just stayed doing the tax defaulted properties because I knew that the cycle now, once you understand that cycle, when the money gets easy and you can get all you want, or you hear secretaries talking about buying houses and renting them, you know, it's too late. You better be getting out. And as that business grew through the 80s, I kept getting less. I mean, for example, I might have had 25 employees. I said, I think I'll drop back to 20. And when the real markets hit, I was at maybe 15. Whereas before, in 86, I had 230 employees in three states. But the beauty, what saved me, wasn't that I was the smartest guy in the world. What saved me is now I get into business where anytime you're going to buy in the tax defaulted market, if you're an educated investor now, you're going to buy wholesale. So let me give you a quick example of wholesale. So last month online, I bought a single family home, 3,000 square feet, 4 acres, pond in the front. The tax man said it was worth $200,000. I bought it for $40,000 at the auction, at a tax auction. So I've got a lot of spread there, a lot of room from the $40,000 to the $200,000. Now, is it pristine? No, it's used and abused. But, you know, that's the old fixer-upper thing that everybody learned the first real estate class, right? So the tax lien and deed business is conservative. Now, the other side of it is, if you were to buy a tax certificate, you could legitimately say this. You could say, Grandma, go buy a tax certificate because you're not going to give your money to a broker or an attorney or an investor. You're going to give your money to the government, and the government will make sure you get your money back. Plus, you know, a little interest rate. Maybe it's 16 or 18%. There's a world of difference between that and regular real estate. So I'm not so smart, but I understand it now.
And the cycle happened, the crash happened 2007, 8, 9, 10, and you chugged right on through that, losing next to no sleep at all, right? Is that the right guess?
Well, we didn't even consider it. We started looking at saying, my goodness, some of these properties are going to get down to tax sale prices because if you recall, some of those markets like Phoenix, See, don't quote me on this. Some guys will know more than I do. I think Phoenix dropped about 70%. I'm sure Las Vegas dropped that much. And they were getting down to the prices we were paying at tax auctions, quite frankly. You know, but of course, you know that's not going to last. But those properties in those major cities that overbuilt, like there's parts of Florida that became the foreclosure capital of the world over on the west side in Cape Coral. I think maybe 60 or 80% of the market was in foreclosure. I mean, people didn't pay much more than 30 cents. And we always think if we can buy for 20 or 30 cents, we're doing great. I mean, that's our target in our business. And that's I've been doing that, you know, since that first time I got wiped out.
That's interesting. I noticed the same thing. We do not necessarily go after the tax certificates in our business model, Ted. We do a lot of wholesaling, so we mail a ton of properties, and you know, some of them are tax sale properties. And we've seen an interesting thing take place in the opposite direction with values, where there's neighborhoods that we couldn't put a deal together in 24 months ago because the tax balance would be, let's say, 15, 18, 20 grand. And that was exactly what the properties were selling for. And now we're seeing a little more appreciation in that lower dollar amount area. That's just those same neighborhoods where maybe they're going for 30, 35, 40. And that's cash sale prices. Investors are buying them from us. We're making a little spread, and then they're doing the rehab and selling them for, let's say, 100 grand or, you know, 150, somewhere in that range. So we've seen that appreciation help us. And, you know, that's like Southside Chicago. We've seen that take place in some of the Atlanta, Georgia areas where we're currently operating, and some of the Philadelphia markets as well. So it's been cool to see that take place. But then to hear your story from the opposite angle, where values were coming down to the prices that you're buying, that's interesting. So would you mind just, you know, for anyone, you and I are both kind of familiar with the tax certificate process, obviously not me, an expert like yourself, but would you do like a little bit of a 101 description of tax certificate investing for anybody that maybe is new to that?
All right. Well, there's two dimensions to it, but let's start with a very basic. Basics, there's a round numbers, 100 million homes in the United States. Every one of them is taxable. If the taxes aren't paid, the local government, meaning the county now, not the, it's a state law, but it's administered by the county. The county government will either put the people in default and say, we're going to issue a tax lien certificate, which is what they would do in Florida. So we'll use Florida on one side and use California on the other side. On the other side, California, what they'll do is they'll put the property in tax default. And the tax default they put it in is not, they're not going to issue a tax certificate. They're ultimately going to confiscate that property. In other words, the county will say, all right, you're in tax default. If you don't pay it by X day, they will confiscate the property. In other words, the local county government will take over the property, and then they will resell it, and we'll come back to that. They'll resell it for starting bid back taxes. Whereas in Florida, they'll put the property in default, and then they'll issue a tax lien certificate. So anybody that's thinking about tax lien certificates, they should say, oh, that's a very benevolent state. Benevolent because what the state is doing is they're not taking the property. They're saying we're going to issue this certificate. And anybody that would be listening to the podcast or anybody that's in the public, they can go buy that certificate and pay someone else's taxes. So when you buy the certificate, now you have the number one lien on the property. It's not the mortgage. It's always the tax. And so that lien, you own it. So the property can never be sold. It can never be transferred. Nothing can happen on that property until that certificate is paid. And so if you own a tax lien certificate, very conservative now, perfect for your grandmother, I always say, that certificate, only two things can happen. Either the people come in and pay it, and you get back all your money. Now, let me repeat that. You get back all your money plus whatever the interest rate was on the certificate, or you get the property. So when you buy a tax certificate, you're either going to get paid or you're going to get the property. It's as simple as that. A place like Florida, in the month of May, they'll have a million certificates available. A million. That's hard to believe. So the tax certificates are in about a little less than half of the states, and the other half of the states sell what we call a tax deed, which means the property was in default, and they're now going to sell it at a public auction. And so about half the states, for example, Los Angeles, a typical sale in Los Angeles will have Los Angeles will have approximately 2,000 properties, which they'll put up for auction. And the starting bids, not the finishing bid now, the starting bid could be as low as just the back taxes. So that's kind of a capsulized view of it.
Got it. Let's talk about, obviously, there's some risks here. How could somebody go out, not know what they were doing, and lose money on a tax deal? Because the way you just described it, Ted, would be like, oh, this is a win-win, no-lose proposition. However, you and I both know there's losses that could be had by making mistakes. Do you want to give a few examples of some of those?
Yeah. First of all, people shouldn't just do it because I said so. They need to go get educated, whether they got my education material or anybody's. You got to get educated, because real estate is, on the surface, looks good, but when you get into the bowels of the whole thing and you're inside it, you know, houses could be full of termite problems, could be flood problems, roofs cave in. There's a million problems, and some people will abandon a property and let it go back to the tax auction because it has problems that are too much to fix. And so most tax auctions, I'll say most, there's occasion where you can get in and look, but in most cases they can. So you could lose your assets very quickly at a tax auction. And believe me, as the market, now it's starting to get hot now. And I watched an auction last week that had 300 properties. Can you imagine 300 properties going for back taxes? And by the time they got to about 150, that was the first day. And the second day, all these people had gone home and told their friends about it. And so all these people started showing up and bidding properties up. And if you're paying 80 cents on the dollar for a tax sale property, you're really spending, you know, 50% more than you should. You should try to get them for 20 and 30 cents. Because they can have bad roofs. They can have bad foundations. Like in the West, you know, they have earthquakes in San Francisco. So sure enough, you're going to have bad foundations. In the East, you're going to have all kinds of contamination. In the North, you're going to have properties that have been abandoned for decades. You know, they're full of mold and stuff like that. So I'm not negative. I'm just, the question was, could you lose? Yes, you could lose. And here's the big loser. People buy at an auction. In some auctions, the mortgages are not removed. So they sell it for the back taxes. The mortgage might still be on the property. What if there was a state lien on the property? What if there was an IRS lien on the property? What if there's a city lien on the property? I can keep naming liens on properties. Believe me, I've been through this for 25 years. There's a lot of different kinds of liens. And if you don't know how to do property research, you don't belong in the tax lien business. If you don't know how to do property research, you don't belong in the business. We're able to do it. I'm not bragging, though. We're able to do it because we have people internally with computer systems and databases where we can research. We can go so far as to tell you, using the correct satellite, I'm not talking about Google now, using the GIS satellites from aloft, that we can come down to, there's a geranium on the front porch. And we can research every property record since the day they bulldozed the land to put the foundation down. But that's a skill level which, you know, a person needs to get a little bit of that. And that's how the people overseas buy. You know, we do, this year we'll do more business in the States, but the past 3 years we did more overseas because we could teach those people to do it. And they see what a market we have. See, you're in the real estate business, so you understand how good the market can be. But in other countries, you can never make the kind of money you can make in the United States. Despite all our problems, there's no place you can make as much money as the United States. It's just hard to believe. But they're willing to do it if you can show them how to do the research. So research is the key.
Yeah, you're right about that, too. And, Ted, you mentioned about the tax deed auctions. And where I am originally from is Delaware County, Pennsylvania. And that's right outside of Philadelphia.
Yeah, we buy Bucks County. We buy over in Montgomery County. Yeah, good for you.
So we have tax deed auctions there, and the same thing took place. I'd say 4 years ago, you could go into the tax deed auction. There's two sales, one where the mortgages are not wiped, and one that is judicial sale, I believe, where everything and all liens are wiped. However, the one issue that two issues we're running into right there that don't make that as great an opportunity as it used to be is, number one, the competition, just like you mentioned. There's people going in and paying 70%, 80%, which is like nearly retail numbers or even higher than retail numbers by the time you factor in the condition of the property, and they're buying these things, you know, maybe sight unseen. Maybe they've been in the property. Maybe they know the seller. I don't know the circumstances, but it's very difficult to go in there and get a deal based on the numbers there. And then the second thing that we deal with in that area is, you can't really get title insurance until a year after you own the property. So it causes for us, we do a lot of wholesaling, 30, 40, 50 deals a month throughout the country.
Yep.
And so a lot of times that's the thing, is you have to wait until that year expires before it's something you do. And that probably works, you know, depending on the time horizon of the business. And if you've built and structured your business and you got the pipeline built out, you know, that would just be a part of the timeline that you would account for, and you would demand a certain discount for that also. Which brings me to strategy for you, Ted. Are you doing a for the property, like a tax deed, tax certificate, going after the properties, or are you looking for a return on your investment or a combination of both? And how does that fit into the timeline horizon of maybe how long one tax deed, one tax certificate deal would take to run through its entire cycle to where you actually achieve your profit goal?
Okay, well, that was a handful. That's a half-hour class, but I'll sure give you a bird's-eye view here. That's good. Tax lien certificates, that's kind of a conservative investment. It's okay, but you should only buy those if you've had someone check them out, because if you don't check them out, which people buy those in mass. If you go and watch the hedge funds, they'll buy 10,000 tax certificates. They'll just buy a whole bunch of them. And they'll try to, instead of trying to get an 18% return, they'll go for a 5% return, because they're just moving money. For the average investor, they need to decide they're going to buy a tax certificate. That's good. But they need to do the research, like I said before. In other words, if you're trying to get the property, you want to probably buy bread and butter neighborhoods. If you're trying to get a return on your money, you probably ought to go to the most exclusive neighborhoods, because not many of those go for tax auction. So that would be one strategy you could use there. Tax lien certificates don't require a lot of work. It could pretty much be classified as a passive investment. So that's that. Now, the other side is for the entrepreneur. Now, the entrepreneur needs to be thinking, you know, what if I have to fix it? Well, of course you're going to have to fix it. I mean, if someone's abandoned it, something's going to be wrong with it. I don't know what, but let's say something. And so those properties, as you said, you're not going to be able to buy that and dump it off on someone else or sell it to someone else or wholesale it and have someone else grab it right away, because, as you said, you've got, in many cases, title issues. So we go in with a plan. We're going to buy it today, and then we know that it's going to take us, for example, let's take a California or a New York or someplace like that. It was probably the same in Philadelphia. I can't remember what it was, but you're going to buy it today. You're going to have to, just for the county to write a deed out, which would take 10 minutes, it's going to take them 90 days before they give you that. So meanwhile, you got a property that's already running up a new tax bill, it's already in your insurance, and you can't do anything with it until you actually get the deed. So that's a waiting period. Now, once you get the deed, then we plan it this way anyway. No inside secret here. It's just experience in the business. Then we hire attorneys to get a quiet title action. That means the attorney's got to go and research this thing. So let's make it simple. Attorney's going to charge you $4,000, maybe $6,000 to do that. What did that just do to your pricing, right? Added 5 or 10% to it, whatever. And now you're waiting. So you got 6 months there. And then if you're buying from the distance, well, now you got time. You're going to have to send your staff there, and you're going to have to hire what you hope to be a good contractor. And that's always iffy, and they all have promises, and a lot of them even have Google reviews nowadays. But you don't know that you're going to get the job done until you give them a picture of what you want, and you pay for the picture, hopefully. But they all don't. So when we buy a tax defaulted property, and again, remember, we're on the conservative side, so we figure a year. So if we were doing it for an investor, we'd say, we're going to shoot for a 35 to 50% return. Whereas when we bought it, we looked at it and said, will this property give us 100%? But in order to CYA, we're going to tell the investor 35 to 50, because there could be glitches. I mean, in a year, a lot can happen on a property, as you know.
Absolutely. What would be your favorite state for tax deeds or lien certificates, and why would that be your favorite?
My favorite is always wherever you live, because then you don't have the commute. So if you lived in Florida, we'll buy in Florida, and you'll find both kinds in Florida. The favorite state, nationwide, the favorite state that everybody thinks is their favorite anyway, is Texas. That's what people always say. Oh, we want to go to Texas. But what happens in reality, now this is 2 decades of experience, in reality, it changes, because Florida might be great right now, okay, but then we might say, oh my goodness, nobody's been doing anything in North Carolina. Let's go see what we can do there. Or we might say, New York, or let's go to, I talked to a group the other day, and they said, why won't you come here to Topeka and Kansas City and whatever, you know, so it's that kind of thing. So the favorite, who knows when someone's going to listen to the podcast, the favorite is do it near where you are till you get, and then when you get your company built, well, then move around.
That makes sense. We have, you know, decent enough success in the Philadelphia region with tax sale properties. We have a decent enough success in Chicago. We actually do pretty decent as well in Florida. We don't do a huge volume there. We're on the West Coast in Tampa Bay area. And then we haven't done anything in Atlanta, Georgia. And my only guess for that, Ted, is that the tax rate is significantly lower based on the price of, you know, the purchase price of the house. So the tax amounts are much, much smaller and probably easier for people to pay. And then they also have the redemption period. So we have not seen anything. We haven't done a single deal there, you know, tax motivated whatsoever.
You still got a year to wait. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Texas is six months. Yeah. There's always good markets. If you what will happen to the business, and I've watched this happen now all these years, what will happen to the business, the winner is going to be the ones that are good at having someone sit in an office and really go through the figure out the property. It's not like it used to be. You drive by and say, oh, I can put paint on that thing, fix the roof, and then put a little white fence around it and get it resold, the quickie fixer-upper stuff. Now it's going to be who can be able to make the best buy and then who can, you know, sustain the business through that renovation, fix-up, get sold. And the renovation fix-up is not the only challenge. You've got to go through all the stuff with the county and waiting, and then when you finish the waiting, then you might have to do that quiet title. And then, you know, there's a lot of processes here, and it doesn't mean it's difficult. It means that you have to be the kind of person like a pilot. You know, a pilot, before they take off, they go through the checklist. Before they land, they go through the checklist. Before they do anything, they go, if they have an emergency, they go through the checklist. And, you know, the entrepreneurial investor is usually a gunslinger. You know, he's got a six-gun on his hip, bang, he starts shooting, right, and hopes he's going to hit something. This is going to be more, it's much, no, I'm not an analytical, so you can imagine what pain it is for me to have to tell you what I just told you. I don't want to sit on a computer for, I don't even want to turn it on, let alone do any work on it, because, you know, that's not boring. It's fun to go out and do deals, right? So the people that are going to be the success in the future are one that can sit in that office, rain or shine, and say, these five look like good deals, and then go out and make the decision. But we never did that in the past. We always went out and made the decision and then said, oh, what do we do? Well, that's the way it was.
Nice.
Yeah.
Hey, Ted, so, you know, I'm going to ask a question here, and I'm going to ask this pertaining not necessarily to the, you know, the coaching and education side, but more along the lines of in the tax deed investing. And the question is there any single idea, system, or strategy that you've implemented over the last 12 to 24 months and experienced maybe exponential growth as a result? And this might even be like a shift that you had to make in light of markets heating up or something of that nature throughout the country where you've been operating.
That's a good question. And the answer is yes. We had to make a massive switch. And that switch was to stop getting in the car and looking and do the analytics on it and then find out about the neighborhood on it and then find out about what you thought your best price was going to be, and then look at the auction before and see what took place. So we did a lot more analytics on it than before. And then the final thing that we did a lot of, which we certainly don't have perfected, you always think you do, but you don't, is the sales process. People that get in the real estate business don't understand that sales is a process, and they don't understand it's hard work. They love to buy. They love to fix up. They love to brag. They hate to get in the nitty-gritty of having to sell it, and that's a challenge.
Yeah, you're right about that. That's ironic. For the last 2 years straight, I moved from Philly to Chicago, and then the team is actually in the living room throughout the country. So there's neighborhoods in Florida. There's neighborhoods even here in Chicago where I live. There's neighborhoods in Atlanta where I feel like, Ted, as a result of doing so much desk due diligence like you just described without having the ability to drive by a property in, you know, in Atlanta, Georgia, I feel like I know these neighborhoods intimately, and then it's like this very, very strange experience when I have the opportunity to drive through some of the neighborhoods that I feel like I know so intimately. It's a little bit of a surprise actually being there in real life, but I do know the neighborhoods not necessarily from the feel on the street, but more from the feel on the values and like what the streets would look like. So it's giving me this different intuition.
Compare yourself with that from 5 years ago. That's
night and day. Yeah, that's night and day. Yeah. I mean,
So all the old-timers in the business, they can do business locally, but they can't do business somewhere else because they can't get enough data before they go because you can't just go grab the newspaper. And there was a time when you could pick up a Chamber of Commerce, you know, brochure and you'd know enough about the community to do something, but you can't do that anymore.
Nice. So, Ted, who is if there is anybody who might be like considered by you a successful real estate investor or maybe a developer or even just an investor in general and why you'd believe they're successful?
Well, you know, I'd have to pick out a guy that, you know, not someone that's big and famous in the, you know, like Warren Buffett, that kind of guy. But years ago, I worked for a guy. He paid me a couple of million bucks over a period. His name was Russ Whitney, and he was in the business of teaching. And he ended up with like 7,000 employees, and then they went public. And, you know, when you go public, you don't do everything right because you're an entrepreneur. And so anyway, he ended up not really shutting down that business, but they kind of sold it off. But, you know, I watched him. He didn't get in there and just do educational stuff. I mean, he ended up building like 4,000 or 5,000 houses. Can you imagine 4,000 or 5,000 houses? This guy knew more about real estate than. And so I always thought, what a success story he was. Now, when he shut one business down, of course, the other one kept going. Now, how smart was that, right? So most people don't. They learn one thing, and that's all they know. I happen to be one of those people. I mean, I know tax liens and deeds. I know foreclosures. But I don't know. I know how to fly airplanes. But that's it. That's my limit. And this guy, I watched all that happen, and he was really good to me over those years because they didn't know about tax certificates, so I'd teach classes for them. But you got the idea. So I think people need a little bit more than, you know, like a real estate broker thinks that suddenly they're going to be an investment advisor. That's not so easy. You know, you got to give the other guy a little credit, and there's a lot to learn there, a lot on both sides.
That's great. Russ, what a blast from the past for me. Russ Whitney, that's my pathway into the business, Ted. It was weekend seminar, then we flew down to Cape Coral, you know, a guy I met in the initial seminar, and we checked out a lot of those lots where he probably built some of those 4,000 or 5,000 homes. And yeah, I wonder what level of responsibility Russ had for Cape Coral's high foreclosure rates during those periods.
Oh, I think he probably created a lot of that, right? They were doing so much financing and oh my God, yeah.
Yeah. And I've had a couple other guests who also worked closely with him. We had Bill Becker on the show, and I'll make sure I link to, you know, Bill's episode for the listeners' benefit there if they want to check him out. So it's cool. He's definitely birthed a lot of great stories and certainly helped my life change night and day from the day I walked into his seminar.
Yeah, so that's terrific. Good for you.
Cool. So two or three book recommendations, Ted, that you have made often.
Oh, boy. First one that comes to top of mind, I didn't plan that one. I should have thought about that more. First one that comes to mind is Perry Marshall's book on 80-20. 80-20, that's a must-read for every investor, entrepreneur, whatever. It's the old Pareto principle, you know, 80% of what you do doesn't get a lot done, 20% makes all your money and that kind of thing. But Perry Marshall, I was in a mastermind with him for years that Dan Kennedy was running. Perry's an engineer. He was the guy that wrote the book on Google AdWords, bestseller worldwide. I think it still is. And then he wrote 80-20. He's written a couple of it. That's hands down one of the best books that I could recommend. And then there's other ones. I think it was Ryan Levesque wrote that book about ask a lot of questions, not just internet marketing, but you know, ask questions of other people, you'll find out a lot. That was another one. That's all that comes to my mind right off the top of my head. I'm a ferocious reader. I mean, my briefcase always has 3 or 4 books in there. I said, why don't you use an iPad? I don't know. I just don't like holding onto a book. And so I get it on the iPad
both.
in case I can't read on the plane, you know, so I use my iPad. Anyway.
Yeah, we're both of the same. I travel heavy. It'll be 3-4 books stuffed in a school bag or something, and I'm carrying that on. First class.
You gotta be buying books all the time. I'm a marketing guy, so I buy every marketing book that comes out, I buy those. But I know your audience is real estate people, so they don't want to hear about all those marketing books. But I love marketing. I buy everybody. Some of it's just kind of a repeat. But boy, when you get a good marketing book that people will give you good stuff, oh my goodness, it's wonderful.
What's the number one that jumps to my marketing book that you would share?
I can't give you a number one. Matter of fact, I don't know why my mind's so blank, but next time we talk, let's do it again, and what I'll do, I'll give you a handful. Matter of fact, I'll give you a dozen. I'm standing in an office on the back of my house. I have a glassed-in office back here, and I've got 4 bookcases back here, and I'm too far away to see them, so I can't tell you.
Fair enough. Ted, if you could go back and share with your younger self, 18, 20 years old, just becoming an adult, the crown jewel of wisdom, what would that be?
Well, it would just be one word. It's not entrepreneurial, where it's the opposite. It would be conservative. I built a real estate empire that was $200 million. I didn't own it all, but I owned 27% of it. And it wasn't unusual to make $1 million a year. And all that had to be done with that business was just stop buying and just absorb it. In other words, I was growing at the rate of $30 million a year. Well, if you'll just stop your growth, you know, be conservative, and just say, all right, all investors, let's just hold off here a little bit. Let's absorb what we are. Let's really push for cash flows, get all that stuff really cash flowing. Instead of always being leveraged, I'll tell you a quick bizarre story. I would 110% finance a property. So I'd go to Mitsui Bank,
oh, wow,
Tokyo, Mitsui. Then I'd go to Credit Lyonnais in Paris. And I'd borrow $1 million from each one of them. And then we would have seller buy the property with 100% financing. Then we would rehab it. This all took a year and a half. But then we'd double the income. Problem was, it was $2.5 million out every time we did it, right? Oh, my God. When the market switched, wiped us out. Just wiped everything out. Whereas all we had to do is just back off, let the properties appreciate. Like office buildings, you know, you can't jump the rents every year. You jump the rents about every 5 years. Well, if you've got one that's progressively increasing every year, just stay there for 20 years. Everything will be paid off. You'll have so much cash flow, you won't know what to do with it. You know, you buy new Mercedes every year with it, you know, on a 200,000 square foot building. There'll be so much. But instead, when you're 30 and 40 years old, your whole mindset is, I want to be a billionaire. Well, it was my whole mindset, which is kind of stupid, right? But so my word was be conservative. And nobody's going to listen to this podcast cares about that. They want to grow. They want to get rich quick and all that.
They want billionaires.
When it comes apart, you have no idea what it is to take that house in the country club and take a loss on it and move into a two-bedroom apartment. Oh, you have no idea. Oh, geez. That makes you very, very humble, very humble.
So, Ted, you know, as we're wrapping up here, if we have someone listening in on the line, wants to maybe figure out some more about the tax sale thing, maybe just reach out to you, what's the best place to get more information about what you do and what we talked about today?
Like everybody, they've got something up on the web. Of course, I'm Ted Thomas, so tedthomas.com, and there's 3 free videos there, and they can kind of learn a little bit about it. They're 20-minute interviews with me like we're doing now with a professional interviewer, and it's, you know, video, so they can just sit there and watch for 20 minutes. And then if they like that, there's some low-price courses there that they can get to kind of put their feet in the water and that kind of thing. I'm not a guy that's going to tell you, go buy a $200 course and you're going to get rich, because it's not going to happen. If you're going to be successful, you need to do what you're doing now. You need to put the time in, the effort. You need a coach or a mentor, and you need someone that's done it. Don't buy anything if the guy hasn't done it. If he's not doing it, forget it, because it's just all words on paper then. But the guys that are doing it, I don't care who they are, they can tell you they learn a lot more from the failures than they do from their success.
Nice. Well said. I will put tedthomas.com in the show notes for anybody listening who wants to check that out. I signed up some good information, good videos there. Hey, Ted, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day here to share with our REI Diamond Show listeners. This has been a tremendous episode with a lot of really valuable, good content for people to go out and maybe get a new branch of the real estate investment businesses or expand into that area. So thank you for coming on the show this morning. Really appreciate you coming on.
Well, you're certainly welcome, and the pleasure's mine, and I appreciate you inviting me to come.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamond Show. Are you interested in receiving a notification when I release the next episode? You can either sign up for email at www.reidiamonds.com or subscribe through one of the podcasting apps, including iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher. We also have a link for expert guests to apply to come on the show at that site. If you are interested in selling a deal to me, visit www.reidiamonds.com and click the link at the top of the page. I am currently buying deals in the Philadelphia Tri-State region, Baltimore, Maryland, D.C. market, the Chicagoland region, the Atlanta, Georgia region, and the Tampa Bay area in Florida. Finally, do you know anybody else who might also enjoy this episode? I'd appreciate the referrals, and I'm sure they would too. And last but not least, I appreciate you, my loyal REI Diamond Show listener. Dan Breslin here, signing off.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the REI Diamonds Show with Dan Breslin. To receive email notifications of new weekly episodes, sign up at www.reidiamonds.com.